Hey guys, this is Mike Mahaffey, the old bastard BJJ guy, here for BJJ Metal Models. Back in my day, we had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get to the academy just to learn some crappy technique from a random purple belt. You kids have it so easy, because now you can just subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium and get tons of great audio courses to learn new techniques, enhance your mindset, and entertain yourself. You can even get personalized rolling reviews from some of your favorite BJJ Metal Models coaches, including me. It's like having your own seminar, you spoiled little whippersnappers. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium right now, get off my lawn, and go train.
Hey, welcome to BJJ Mental Models, episode 282. I'm Steve Kwan. BJJ Mental Models is your guide to a conceptual and intelligent jiu-jitsu approach. And today, I'm back with everyone's favorite designated winner, Mr. Josh McKinney. How are you doing, Josh?
I am doing good. I wasn't sure where you were going to go with everyone's favorite. I was like, I'm not everyone's favorite anything. I don't know. I liked the designated winner there.
Hey, now, as of this recording, right at this moment, as I told you, there's a thread on Reddit about you right now. So you must be everyone's favorite something. And my favorite part about that thread is the top comment is, who the fuck is Josh McKinney?
Honestly, that's such a better top comment than most of the top comments when I get brought up on stuff. You know, they go offensive quick.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Whenever you are the topic of discussion on Reddit, it is usually not a good thing. There is wisdom to be had in trying to avoid being the topic of conversation there if you can.
Yeah, I agree.
But with all of that said, I mean, maybe we should answer that question. Who the fuck is Josh McKinney? You, of course, have been on the podcast before. We had an awesome chat about your designated winner philosophy. I'll put a link in the show notes for people who missed that one. Just, I love that conversation. I highly recommend it. Of course, people may or may not know you are on the BJJ Mental Model review team. So our premium subscribers are used to getting feedback from the two Joshes, Josh Wentworth and yourself. Both of you are two of our very popular coaches there. But beyond that, tell us your story, man. Who are you? Who the fuck is Josh McKinney?
I am just somebody who started jiu-jitsu a long time ago. I started 16 years ago when I was 14, and I just have been in love with the art ever since. And so any chance I get to express myself in a different way in the art, even as a, you know, as a coach, I own a few jiu-jitsu schools and a content creator. I have a YouTube channel and I run a podcast, the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. And I just try to share my perspective, because being somebody who came up during the time that I came up, in the area that I came up, and competing against the people that I came up competing against, generated, I think, a unique perspective. And so I am just somebody who tries to share that perspective with people that want to hear it.
Awesome. And of course, you are part of the Asian Jiu-Jitsu Mafia, you know, alongside myself, my brother, Joseph Chen, Margot. You know, we're just an ever-growing roster. We're taking over the sport one day at a time.
Is there a percentage of Asian you have to be, just out of curiosity, to be in this crew?
Unsure. I am technically 3/8. And so I'm hoping that's enough. I don't know if the IBJJF has rules about this, but I have always considered myself Asian enough to be part of that. You know, I figure if you've got the Asian last name, that should count.
Yeah, man. McKinney doesn't hit too well on the ear. Again, top comments. One time I competed against Murillo, and the top comment on that was, this doesn't look like a Josh McKinney.
Well, all of that said, today you wanted to talk about one of your coaching philosophies and styles. You call it Champions Stay Present. I love the name. I love the idea. I'm presuming this is about mindfulness and not about time travel. But if I'm wrong, I mean, just tell me, right? I'm all about talking about time travel. Tell me what Champions Stay Present is, what it means, and like, how does that actually manifest on the ground when you're coaching your athletes?
You know, this is something, like I said before, I started jiu-jitsu at a time there weren't a lot of people doing jiu-jitsu, and I was competing at a time where you were the only competitor at your gym, or maybe there was one or two others. And in this time, it was really hard when you would run into a problem, because, you know, obviously you could ask your coach, but if he hadn't ran into that problem, there was really nobody to ask. And so something that I always dealt with in jiu-jitsu was, I wanted to compete, but I suffered from performance anxiety. And it was just, it It wasn't always there. I didn't always lose to it, but I competed a lot. And even all the way up until brown and into black belt, I still suffered from performance anxiety. And I left a lot of matches the way I think a lot of people leave tournaments, with like, not only did I lose, but I didn't go do my jiu-jitsu. I didn't go perform as myself at all today. And when I started to really just kind of take ownership of that, even at black belt, that like I'm going against guys that I really think I should have a much better chance against, but I'm just not performing well against them. And I could feel the anxiety, and I could feel myself, looking back now, not being present, not being in the moment, being worried about other things. And I got so frustrated with that. So really what happened was, a few years ago, me and a group of my students, we started competing just a lot. We just started competing basically once a month, and we were doing kind of bigger tournaments. We were doing IBJJF stuff. And the idea just started to come out of, we all need help with this performance to be able to perform as yourself on command each time. And that's kind of, I think, the, you know, I don't try to tell people like, oh yeah, this will make you perform out of your mind. You'll be better than you've ever felt before. This is simply like, you know, on a good day at the gym where some visitors come in and you go and you grapple them and you don't think much of it and you beat them. You know, that's how ideally you're going to feel and be able to perform if you do this right. If you just understand how to be present and how to just how to turn this, even tie this into your training method, but just how to be present, I think is going to be the big thing.
Well, let's expand on that a bit, because presence and mindfulness are one of the easiest concepts to explain, but one of the hardest concepts to actually execute. I think I heard a talk one time, I think it was Jim Carrey actually, who was talking about this. And he talked about how, you know, he was practicing mindfulness, and for this like beautiful 5-minute period, he achieved it and he was fully in the present and it was wonderful. And he spent his whole life trying to get back to that 5-minute period. It's a very hard thing to do, especially in today's world where there's so much going on. I mean, I can only imagine if you're a competitor, how hard it must be to be present in that moment. It's much, much easier said than done to win this battle of being present. Something though that you have said, which I've never heard anyone else say, and now that you say it, I think I'm just going to quote it for the rest of my life. It's not just about being in the present moment, but the thing I also love about what you said is it's about being authentically yourself. Because I have also heard many competitors say that they just didn't feel like they were themselves out there. And that raises a very interesting question of, well, what does that mean? Why was that? And who are you really? Who is the real you? And if that wasn't you out there, then who was that person? And how did a different person wind up coming out there? That is a very interesting topic of conversation that I have not heard many people explore in the jiu-jitsu space. And I'm curious to expand on that. So maybe I'll turn that over to you then to maybe talk a little bit more about this, because I'm sure everyone who's been in a high pressure scenario like competition can relate to this.
Yeah. So I got to have a conversation with Huron Gracie. This is actually right when COVID started. It was over Zoom. And we actually ended up, I had all these questions about training and stuff, and we ended up talking about being present. And I didn't realize how impactful that interview was going to be on me. But there was this point in the interview that he said something along the lines of, if somebody hurt my wife or one of my kids, my time would be better spent attending to my wife or kid than it would be trying to find and hurt that person. And he said, like, in the moment, I would defend my wife or child, of course. But he said, it would be better for me to go to them and to make sure that they are okay than to go and harm this other person, because that moment has passed. You know, the next moment, the best thing I could do is to go and attend to my wife or child. And I just remember him saying that, being like, man, I don't even understand what that means. What does he mean by that? And I really don't know if I understand mindfulness outside of jiu-jitsu competition to the extent that I really feel like I get it in jiu-jitsu competition. But there's this tough thing with when you realize you have competition anxiety and you start to set out looking for what you should be doing. People will tell you to visualize, and they will be like, yeah, visualize, you know, the venue, visualize the mats, visualize this. They'll always tell you all these different things to visualize. And something that would happen to me, because I would always try it, is I would be visualizing at points when I was at the tournament. And I would be like visualizing my first match when I was at the tournament. And if I really, it was one day I realized like that wasn't being present. When I go to a jiu-jitsu competition, you know, at 30 years old, there's always a chance that I've got a career-ending injury on my way. And this could be the last jiu-jitsu competition I get to do. And being aware of that will take you from like, okay, I'm going to do my warm-up and I'm going to, you know, jog and I have to lose a couple pounds even because I didn't cut weight right. And so I have to lose a couple pounds of water. This is going to suck. And if I told you though that day, like, hey, this is the last competition that you ever, ever, ever will get to do. In that moment, you would take your run and you would be like, this is so worth it. This is the last time I get to experience this terrible experience of having to cut weight before my match. But you would be in the moment. And that's the biggest thing that I look at is like when I am doing my warm up, when I'm before I go to the tournament, when we wake up that morning, I'm not visualizing my matches. That stuff has been done. The prep work has been done. The game planning has been done. All I'm thinking is I am waiting for my moment. And I train jiu-jitsu so when the moment comes, I will be ready. So often people visualize, okay, this is what's going to happen in my match. I'm going to pull guard on this guy. I'm going to sweep him. I'm going to mount him. I'm going to cross collar choke him. They visualize this 1,000 times. And sometimes that even works all the way up until you go against the guy that pulls guard on you first. And since you cannot deal with that guy because all your visualization was, oh, it has to be this way. You're going to sweep him. You're going to be in mount. You're no longer in the moment. Right? You are just too focused on something happening. It would be better for you to just react to the fact that you're in the guy's guard and try to open the guard and try to pass. And so often when I have athletes or myself that struggle with competition, we can boil it down to, oh, at this point, you weren't present. At this point, you started to get tired and you started to look later in your match and say, oh no, I'm a little too tired. And if I go a little harder now, then later in the match, I will be totally gassed and I won't have any energy. And that's not being present. You're in the fight. You just continue to fight. If you get so tired that you cannot lift your head anymore and you're about to die, you should have done more cardio. But you need to stay in the moment to be able to perform. And so that is kind of like, I know that was a few different examples, more of what it isn't, but it really is hard to explain exactly what being present, being in the moment actually is.
Well, I can definitely expand on that a bit from my own personal experience. I mean, I'm not a jiu-jitsu competitor, but you know, everyone who listens to this knows that I often have to deal with kind of challenging situations at the day job. And as the saying goes, a presentation is 90% theater, 10% preparation. People often over-prepare for these things because they think that the right way to prepare for a difficult, high-pressure environment is to have like the perfect plan. But the reality is, as the saying goes, right? No plan ever survives first contact with the enemy. Usually the purpose of planning is not to create a script that you can adhere to exactly, but the purpose of planning is to give you practice and experience so that no matter what happens, you have an answer. You can figure something out on the fly. I'm actually going to later today write a newsletter based on someone asked me on Reddit. There was a Reddit thread a while ago about someone asking like, how do you connect all of the BJJ mental models? So what I guess they had done is they'd gone to our database and we've got like over 150 concepts on there that we've explained. And they were kind of looking for an order of operations. And can you mind map these and connect all of these together to figure out the perfect flow chart to take you through all of these concepts? And that is a very seductive idea. People in jiu-jitsu always try to do this. I always make fun of white belts because, as I'm sure you have seen, Josh, one of the things that I know white belts love to do is they'll try to flowchart out every possible thing that could happen in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You ever seen one of those like massive flowcharts? The white belt's like, I think if I can perfectly understand how all of this stuff connects on a flowchart, I'll have it figured out. The problem is, though, that first of all, the more shit you try to cram into your head, the harder it's going to be for you to make a decision at any given moment, right? Right. I mean, if you try to think of jiu-jitsu as this massive flowchart that you can memorize, what you'll find is you will never be able to make decisions fast enough to be effective because you just can't make decisions fast enough if there's that many variables at play, right? You need to be thinking more simply rather than more complex if you want to actually go out there and achieve success. Very much the same in competition. If in your game plan, you have a scripted sequence of events that's going to happen in your mind, you know, you have to understand there's a 99% chance things are not going to go the way that you expect, right? If your game plan is to go out there and set up the most beautiful double leg takedown that's ever been shot, and then your opponent immediately drops ass onto the mat and pulls guard, your whole game plan's out the window, right? So the process of game planning is not so much about scripting the outcome. It's about building confidence that no matter what happens, you feel good about your ability to adapt. And that's the way that, I think that's just a different way of kind of explaining what you're talking about here, which is if your preparation is all about, you know, I want to make sure that I can script the future and I can control exactly what's going to happen when we go out there and compete, that will never happen. That will never materialize. But if your prep is more about building confidence in the moment, in the gym, that you know what you're doing, and that no matter what happens, right, no matter what is thrown at you, that you can adapt and succeed and thrive, that to me is what good preparation looks like. And that's the same not just in combat sports, that's the same if you are giving a lecture or you're presenting a slideshow or a pitch deck or something, right, is the exact same. You want in your preparation to build confidence that you know the material well enough that you can riff on anything that's going to happen. It's not about reciting the words properly because you can never control what's going to happen. It's about the quality of your prep and the confidence that that gives you.
Yeah, dude, I totally agree with that. And I mean, just on that same note, that is the reason that I push learning and concept so much is because there's this book called Essentialism. In it, the author talks about the decision to eliminate millions. And it's this idea that if I make a decision on, for example, I talk a lot when I talk about guard passing, this idea of chest over chest, I make a decision to focus on distance and less on the grip fight and less on the leg pummeling until I win the distance. And what happens is I never have to decide what guard pass to do. A lot of times my leg pummeling is at a certain area that makes me go, okay, it's time to go for a knee cut. Okay, it's time to go for a Toreando. And that one decision of just changing my focus makes it so much easier to not have to make so many minor decisions. And when you do that, like when you go back to that white belt or blue belt that creates the flow chart of all the things, or you create the three moves that you like from every position, and it's just like, yeah, that all changes as soon as the scenario changes. You have three sweeps that you like from half guard. Okay, this guy is up 2 points and he has no intention of moving. And all the sweeps that you put on your flow chart, they had to do with him wanting to pass your guard. And this guy doesn't want to pass your guard. He just wants to sit there. And so, you know, being able to adapt in those situations to the changing time, the changing points, and just the fact that you're going against somebody you don't know, you have to just be aware in that present moment and then make your decisions as they come.
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to do because it's so counterintuitive, right? People, they want control of the future. They want to be able to predict what's coming. And there is this feeling that if I just prep enough, I will be able to control everything that could happen. And there is this feeling, I guess, that if you're really good at jiu-jitsu, you should be able to do that. I've said this on the podcast. I remember back when I was a white belt, I thought that what would make a good brown or a black belt was basically their ability to call their shots, right? I assumed that a good brown belt could go in there and be like, I'm going to scissor sweep this mofo. And then because they're just so good at jiu-jitsu, they can always get the scissor sweep. But what I know now as a black belt is most of the time, I have very little control over what's actually going to happen, right? I can have the best scissor sweep in the world, but if Buddy stands up, then I can't scissor sweep him anymore, right? So trying to force a game plan that is expired and is no longer effective is just a bad idea. So what good jiu-jitsu really looks like is you're kind of just reactive and flowing with the moment, but you're making a series of very simple decisions at any given time to try to tip the scales just a bit in your favor. And you brought up a great example of that, right? Controlling the distance. A huge, huge mistake that beginners make is failing to do that and just zombie walking into people's guard and then wondering like, well, why can't I do my knee cut pass from here? I'm doing all of the steps, right? It's like, well, the problem is you walked right into their guard and you gave them De La Hiva and they fucked you up, right? I mean, you can have the best knee cut in the world, but if you just don't manage the distance and you just walk into a doomsday scenario for yourself, it doesn't matter how good your knee cut is. So most of the time, good jiu-jitsu is not about trying to execute all of the steps of the technique perfectly. It's about little decisions like, I can't let him get a dominant grip on me here. I can't let him be at this distance from me. I can't let him control my arm past the elbow joint. You know, that kind of stuff. Those little decisions are actually much simpler to keep in your head and to make good decisions on the fly. And if you're thinking of jiu-jitsu that way, as a series of just very small, simple decisions, it's easier to react quicker. I mean, I can't overstate the importance of timely reactions in jiu-jitsu. If it takes you too long to make a decision, you're cooked. It doesn't matter how good your technique is if the other person is already two steps ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the decisions when you're in really intense moments, when you're in really hard rounds, or when you're just evenly matched, a lot of the decisions are not made in the middle of that match. They are made weeks before if you have this, you know, the skills for those decisions, and then you just kind of react. You know, how often do you ask a coach a question and he says, let me feel it. And he has to actually get into the position to know what he would do. You know, his knowledge is kind of built into his ability to move and his ability to feel what's going on. And, you know, as much as we want it to be visual all the time, and as much as we want it to be, oh, just always grab here and always do it this way, when it comes to, and this is just what I've really learned from competing at like adult black belt, when you're competing against the best guys in the world, not only are they so good at what they're good at, but you can show them something and their ability to adapt to it is, it's otherworldly. And you cannot do that if you're trying to analyze and you're trying to do, you have to do that by feel. And so when you see the highest level guys, they have some confidence in their feel. And to me, I think that that kind of comes from the way that they train. And there's a few different ways I think that you can get to this mindset, but I really think that it has to do with how you get reps getting to this mindset.
So, I mean, how do we do that, right? Because the challenge is that all of the prep we're doing is in advance of the tournament, right? We want to stay present, but the competition that we're preparing for happens in the future. The present moment when you're doing prep is you're in the gym, maybe you're at home in bed and you can't shut off your mind because you're scared of what's going to happen tomorrow. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that pull people out of the present moment. How does the champion stay present when they're in the gym and the competition is a week out, right? And your mind is full of these anxious thoughts, right? You're doing things in the gym like warm-ups and stuff like that. You know, you're working on technique. This might not exactly map to what the competition is going to look like. So how do you do that? Because I'm presuming that your answer is going to be, you want to stay present while you're in the gym. What does presence look like in a typical class if you're helping someone prepare for competition?
Okay, so I think that there's some depth to this answer. First, I think you have to think of being present just like we probably think of any other important part of jiu-jitsu. It is a skill, meaning it's developable, right? We can get reps and get better at it. And so I had a doctorate in sports psychology come on my podcast once. He was talking about imagery training. And he was just talking about the idea of getting reps. And he's like, people don't like the idea of visualization or imagery training because like they lose focus. And he goes, so you like, you know, put yourself in that mindset and you take your rep. And he goes, and when you lose focus, that's just one rep. And then he goes, and then you do it again. And then you get another rep. And he goes, and you'll notice as you do this more with whatever you're trying to visualize, you get better at not losing focus. And so when it comes to jiu-jitsu competition, I think that yes, it's good to just practice a present mindset when somebody's teaching class, being in that moment, you know, being aware, I think is great. But when you're trying to develop the skill, I think that the most valuable thing that you can do is separate one day or even one day every 2 weeks of your training, just one day to performance, and then the other days to skill development. And so on your performance day, yes, you're trying to perform, but you are trying to develop the skill of performing. You are trying to develop the skill of, can I come in on this Friday every single week where it's tough rounds? My goal in the rounds is to win the rounds. And I know that it's going to be intense. I feel that bit of anxiety. Can I go in spite of having that anxiety? Can I show up and can I perform? And doing that over and over, and this is just how we explain it, is just this idea of volume or performance days. And so your volume days are days that you get reps. You just get reps of training. You just try to figure out what you're trying to get good at, or you just try to get good at what you should be focused on. And then on your performance day, you focus on winning. And when you focus on winning, that allows you to then get reps of being a competitor without having to compete as much as everybody else. Because honestly, the simplest way to develop a really good mindset to competition is to just sign up for 50 competitions in a year and just compete every single weekend. And by the end of it, you will be so good. Competing will be so effortless for you because being able to do that is a skill. And I know this because when I was 15, 16, 17, and I was competing every weekend, I was a great competitor and I didn't suffer from performance anxiety. But when I started to get a little older and compete 4 times 1 year or 3 times in a year and just, you know, have less time, there was way more lead up and there was way more time to just not be present and to just not be like, okay, I'm just going to show up and I'm just going to do jiu-jitsu. It became like almost too much focus on these tournaments and I would make myself more anxious and really keep myself out of the moment when it was time to go compete. And so, yeah, I think the real way to get good at being present and just to exercise any type of mindset that you're going into with competition is to get reps. The big mistake I see so many people make is they will buy like all these different mindset books and then they will schedule the pans 6 months from now and they will assume that if they have read all these books and by the time that it's time to just show up at pans that they're going to have dealt with their competition anxiety. And it's just not the case. It is a skill. I still get scared every time I compete. It's just the matter of can I go perform whether I'm scared or not.
That is great advice. And I think probably most listeners can relate to this to some degree. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed in jiu-jitsu is that many of us have a tendency to really overanalyze and overthink things, myself included. I mean, I am notorious for this. It's been something I've always battled with. And only recently have I realized that it's probably getting in the way of my skill developments. And I would assume that anyone that has taken the time to listen to 282 episodes of a podcast called BJJ Mental Models is probably also inclined to overthink things as well. And I know that that's tempting because many of us, especially in a sport like jiu-jitsu, which is so accessible to, you know, people who work desk jobs, right? People who maybe are used to solving their problems by being overly analytical. They try to apply that same approach to something like jiu-jitsu. And I have certainly been this guy. I'm that guy who, if I see a cool technique or something, or I see something happen, I will sit there and I will grill that person for like an hour about how to do it. And I want to understand every single detail. But I'm increasingly understanding that that's not the way to get better at a skill like jiu-jitsu. I mean, the only way to get better at the end of the day is you have to do it. You have to do it and get as many quality reps in as you can. And even if your reps are not perfect, getting more reps in is better than obsessing over whether they're perfect or not. This is a very, very common mistake that both students make in jiu-jitsu and often instructors make by trying to impose it on their students, which is they're way too concerned about making sure that people know every single individual detail and communicating that and making sure the rep looks just chef's kiss, perfect, right? But that doesn't help you get better. What helps you get better is making sure that in the precious time you have in the class, whether it be 60 or 90 minutes, you get as many reps as possible. And even if some of those reps look like dog shit, right? The process of getting those reps helps you refine the technique, learn the movements, and get better at things. You really can't outthink the process of getting better at jiu-jitsu, right? And I know it's tempting to think that if you watch all of the Danaher instructionals and you listen to all of the podcasts and you read all of the books, that that's going to help you a ton. And it will help you ideate and maybe organize your thinking and decision-making. But at the end of the day, you can't outthink the need to get the reps in. And a good coach will structure their class to make sure that it maximizes getting reps in. This is a mistake that many instructors make, where they don't really structure the class to maximize the time where both students can get reps in, get good quality practice. Something that the ecological dynamics guys focus on is making sure they're doing just that, right? Less ritual, less lecture, more focus on quality reps that actually help people do the things that will make them more effective as a grappler. And that, again, is a trap that I know all of us, if you listen to this podcast, I'm pretty sure you've been overly analytical at some point too. And the thing I have observed as I get older is that tendency makes it much harder to be present. And although it being analytical is a very powerful life skill, you have to know when to turn that off and just buckle up and do shit, right? And that is something that you have to be able to do if you want to practice a skill like jiu-jitsu and get better over time.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Awesome. Now, I want to talk about something here that's related to not so much presence, but failure to be present, and that is imposter syndrome. Right? Imposter syndrome, I think, is probably closely related to presence. Imposter syndrome, for those who don't know, is basically when you just feel like you're not good enough. Whether or not that's true is almost irrelevant. People at all skill levels have imposter syndrome. We had an episode with Drew Foster about imposter syndrome a while back. And for those who don't know Drew, he's like a jiu-jitsu genius. Everyone says so. Everyone knows it. He does an amazing podcast with us and he gets really analytical about jiu-jitsu. But, you know, even he deals with this. And I've had world champions on the podcast who suffer greatly from imposter syndrome, just the feeling that they're not good enough. And I think a big part of that is because you're not present. You're letting your mind wander into hypotheticals and future scenarios, and you're dwelling on the past. But tell me a bit about what imposter syndrome means to you, how that can derail a competitor, and what you guys do at your gym when you're coaching athletes to help them overcome imposter syndrome.
So, yes, I think not being present. I also think there's a lot of comparison that goes into imposter syndrome. You know, you see how someone else did it and you say, well, if I can't do it in that way, then, or I'm not as good as that person, then how could I ever do it? You know, how could I ever go compete? Or this purple belt that always beats me, he just got submitted in the tournament. How could I go win? And again, that's also not being present. And it's just not, you know, it's not the moment. I remember there was one time really early in my jiu-jitsu, this guy who now has went on to win probably 6 different masters, black belt, world titles. I remember him saying something along the lines to me of, I don't have to be better than you at jiu-jitsu if we compete. He's like, I just have to be better than you for 5 minutes. And I remember when he explained that to me and I really started to understand like, oh, it's about performing in that moment. It really isn't us trying to figure out who the best jiu-jitsu person is when we go compete. If it was, we would probably positional spar a bunch of different positions that matter a lot, right? It's about who's better at performing in that one moment, the jiu-jitsu that they know. And so often there are these intrusive thoughts and they're always about you. And they're honestly, they're usually based in a little bit of truth. So like, for example, if I'm going out to compete and I have been competing at adult for years and I have made the finals of a lot of different divisions. And in my head, what'll start to play is, well, you've lost in the finals 4 times, 5 times, you know, you've never been able to win in the finals. You've never gotten gold at, you know, at one of these tournaments. And it starts to play in your head. That's just your story, you know, and you start to hear that. And I really do, you know, as somebody who considers himself mentally tough, I hear that stuff when I'm going to compete. And again, most of the time, it is just drawing myself back to the moment. Just like, none of that matters anymore. You know, we're right. It's today that matters. And just being able to do that over and over. And again, it's a reps thing. I competed a few weeks ago and I was warming up and my warm-up was, my legs weren't there when I started jogging. I could feel it. And people that compete a lot will know what I mean. Sometimes for whatever reason, whether it's anxiety, whether it's travel, but sometimes your body just feels terrible when you go to start warming up at a tournament. And in that time, my mindset started going into, you know, you're not in good enough shape. You are not this, you're not that. And it started to just play into things that didn't have anything to do with the moment that I was in. You know, the moment that I was in was I was about to warm up, weigh in, and then go see if the jiu-jitsu that I brought that day was good enough to win. And that's pretty much all I can do. You know, I can't, everything else besides that is out of my hands. And being able to just let go and to just say, all right, I'm going to go, you know, I'm in control of if I go try to perform or not. You know, I'm not in control of if this person's better. There are certain people that I've competed against that I could have had a 10 times better mindset, but the mindset wouldn't have made up for the lack of skill. But most of the time for me, it's the opposite. My mindset kind of killed my skill, you know, or seemed to limit my skill. And yeah, I just noticed that imposter syndrome is how that tends to be for most of us. You hear your training partner say it when you guys all go to compete. They'll talk about like, you know, oh, this guy's too big, this guy's too this, this guy's, meaning I am not good enough to beat him. And you just don't know that until you just go out and compete.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I think what you're saying here aligns with what you said at the beginning of this conversation, where sometimes athletes just don't feel like they are themselves out there. Sometimes I think the challenges with being present might be related to the denial of who you truly are. A lot of the time when athletes have imposter syndrome and they're beating themselves up about how I'm just not good enough at this or whatever, I think part of that might just be not being accepting of who your authentic self truly is. And to give an example of this, friend of the show, Nick Perler, he's the head of the Perler Wrestling Academy in Missouri. I've had him on the podcast before. He's written an incredible mindset and performance book for grapplers called The Perler Way. We actually have a whole series on BJJ Mental Models Premium. It's like a 9-part epic where we sit down with him and we unpack exactly what his philosophy is. And he talks about this a lot and the importance of being authentic to yourself. In the case of wrestling, a complaint he often hears from his athletes is, you know, I'm not explosive. I'm just slow. I need to be more explosive. And something that he often says is, well, why do you need to be more explosive? There are like world champion wrestlers out there who are not particularly fast and explosive. That's kind of a style, right? Are you trying to be something that you're not? Are you comparing yourself to someone that you're not? I mean, jiu-jitsu is a great parallel, right? I know that in jiu-jitsu, yes, of course, there are some incredibly fast, explosive athletes. But I mean, Gordon Ryan is like this giant heavyweight sloth, right? That dude moves slower than me. He's not explosive at all, but he'll fuck you up, right? I mean, he is an amazing grappler. And I think the lesson there is sometimes the things that we think are our weaknesses maybe aren't. And maybe the problem is we're not being authentic to who we truly are. Maybe we're trying to play somebody else's jiu-jitsu instead of our own. I used to train with a black belt and he was kind of my main coach and his style of jiu-jitsu. And he kept trying to get me to adopt his style. It just never worked. And it was very frustrating. It was kind of like a very gi dependent, like sort of like De La Riva style kind of guard. And it was never my thing. I always struggled. And then one day, you know, he actually sold the gym to one of the other black belts. And that guy kind of became my main coach. And his style was much more aligned with the kind of jiu-jitsu that I do. And the instant I started focusing on that style, suddenly everything kind of connected. And I realized that what I was doing before was not necessarily wrong. It just wasn't my instructor's jiu-jitsu. It was very different, but it wasn't necessarily wrong. And there are ways to be my authentic self and play my authentic jiu-jitsu and to embrace those things and to turn them into strengths rather than thinking of them as weaknesses. You know, you hear black belts in jiu-jitsu talk about this all the time and about, I mean, it sounds totally woo-woo, right? But black belts will always say that good jiu-jitsu is about self-expression and being yourself out there and kind of finding the flavor of jiu-jitsu that reflects who you are. And I mean, I have to say, I totally co-sign on that. It's absolutely true. I think that the best athletes in the world out there are very in tune with who they are and what type of jiu-jitsu they want to play. It's not necessarily right or wrong or better or worse than the other styles out there or what other people are doing, but it is their authentic style of jiu-jitsu. And I think that finding that flavor of jiu-jitsu that feels authentic to you is so important when it comes to game planning, right? Sometimes it's not about choosing the best techniques or studying the meta and picking out what is like moneyballed to be most effective at the highest level. Sometimes it is about what speaks to you personally and what feels right. That's such an important part of martial arts and self-expression that I think coaches sometimes don't talk about enough, which is encouraging athletes to find the flavor of jiu-jitsu that makes them feel the most like themselves.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's where the Eco guys, I think, have it spot on. It's about, you know, get goals, have goals that are simple to accomplish, that make sense to accomplish, get good at accomplishing those goals. And we're all going to accomplish those goals differently. It's not going to be the same every time I armbar, you know, it's going to be different, much less when I teach that armbar, when I try to share it with one of my students.
Yeah. I think the beauty of the Eco approach in a lot of ways is it encourages you to detach from what you think might be the quote unquote right way to do things. The traditional way, which is more about following instructions step by step, The problem there is that in reality, it's almost impossible to execute a move step by step as your instructor taught you against a resisting opponent. It just never happens that way. And so this kind of creates this feeling of dissonance where it feels like you as the athlete, you're just not doing anything right because it's not the way you were told to do it. Even if you're technically making it work, you might feel like this is just not right because I'm not doing what professor told me to do. I'm not doing what Danaher told me to do. But the beauty of ECO is it encourages that self-discovery and figuring out what does work for you. And I mean, there are people out there who make weird shit work for themselves, right? And I mean, who are we to tell people what good jiu-jitsu looks like? There's so much variance out there in terms of what people are able to make work at a high level. I think encouraging people to be comfortable with that is a big part of good coaching.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So in terms of like tactically as an instructor, if you want to apply this to a class, what does a champion stay present class look like? How is it structured? You know, I know that there's so many different schools of thought. You have the quote unquote traditional way that classes are structured, kind of, you know, there's a warm up and then there's like a lecture of a technique and then there's rolling. And then you've got people who have a more eco approach and then you've got reverse classroom. Like there's so many ways to run a class. But what kind of tactical advice would you give to coaches about how they can structure a class to help their athletes be more present in the moment when they're there?
I think the definition of coach and instructor is important because your instructor can be a lot of different people and show you moves, and your coach can be a lot of different people, but your coach doesn't necessarily have to show you moves. I would say that this falls along the coach, like especially if you have competitors, this falls along the coach's job to go to the individuals, especially the ones that struggle with competition. And what you're going to do is it's not just going to be like, hey, you know, you struggle competing, you go, oh, you should try to be more present. You know, most likely you would find that like, oh, you struggle competing. Do we ever perform in the gym? Or are you just always messing around in your training and having fun in your jiu-jitsu training? And then when it's time to go to competition, you're shocked when a guy scores 2 on you and isn't willing to play jiu-jitsu anymore. You know, are you missing that part? Is that why we're not there? And so you can kind of ask those questions, but I think that those things are best done for individual conversations. Cause it's not like me and one of my students need to be meeting about this for months and months and months. It should be like, we talk about this, we get a game plan together on, all right, let's try to get some reps competing. Let's get some reps of actual competitions. And then let's get reps of our weekly, we pretend that we're competing in our school. Or even what I actually do is one of my friend's schools, my performance day, I go there once a week and he lines up big, strong, tough guys. And we compete against each other that day. And I feel way more anxiety because it's not my gym. And, you know, I have to take a little bit of a drive to get there and think about, you know, the training that's going to happen and all the tough guys that are going to be coming after me that day. And, you know, that just having that is going to be what I am pushing to most of my students is like, hey, make sure you are getting reps and then creating some type of pre-day of hard training routine. So then we can just go right back to that when it comes to the actual competition. And then ideally we will be able to, you know, as we say, just do jiu-jitsu.
What do you think in terms of, you know, when you're coaching athletes here, is there anything that you can do from, for example, a perspective of warm-ups? Or, you know, when people talk about mindfulness, they're often talking about things like breath work. That's one of the most common ways that people encourage you to stay present is focus on breathing. Is that something that you think has a place in a jiu-jitsu class? Because almost everyone that I've talked to agrees that mindfulness is important, and they agree that breath work is an important way to do it. But what I found interesting is whenever I ask high-level athletes or their coaches, you know, what do you actually do in the gym to teach this? The answer I almost always get is, well, we don't do that. We focus on the techniques. And I'm thinking, well, that's just, it's interesting to me because we know that this is important. Everyone agrees that it is, but I don't often see people make that a part of their instruction. And I wonder, is that something that you do? Or do you see that as kind of outside the scope of your role as a jiu-jitsu coach?
So it is definitely something that I do. My approach a little different on it. I am a huge advocate of breath work for jiu-jitsu competition anxiety. I think that honestly, I'm a huge advocate of warming up. And so I don't want to be misconstrued. I always warm up. I think it's a huge part of it. But if you only gave me time to do one, my breath work or my warm up, before the tournament, I would choose breath work every time. And I have before multiple tournaments and not warmed up and only done breath work. But I brought in my friend Miles Lucas to teach seminars at my gym. He's a jiu-jitsu black belt, but he is certified in Wim Hof breath work. And then does his own breathwork stuff. And so a lot of like my knowledge of this came from just picking his brain and then experimenting with stuff and then picking his brain again. But what we kind of came up with was just the ability to disassociate when you do breathwork is so important for competition because it gets you out of your own head that we started to be like, yeah, this is what we all do. And so basically how it works now, because this is like a free video on YouTube that we use for this breath work. This isn't like some sacred passed down thing. This like anybody could just go and search Wim Hof breathing and we do the full 5-minute video of it about 2 hours out. And it makes such a significant difference in how you feel about your competition anxiety. And so, yeah, how it is for our students now is we just like pretty much send you a text message before you're going to compete with the newer guys. Like, hey, dude, this is what we do. This is how we do it. It works really well. You can choose to, if you don't want to do it, you know, if you have something else, you played a different sport and you have something else you like to do, do that. But we do know that this works really well for jiu-jitsu. And so, but I would say a huge percentage of my students all do breath work, not even on a day-to-day basis, but just before competition.
Breath work is an interesting thing because I think a lot of people hear about it and they think this is like some Eastern medicine yoga thing that just doesn't have any basis. But actually, there is an emerging body of science and evidence that shows that there, you know, there's reason to believe there is significant benefit to having a breathwork practice in your life or, you know, a mindfulness practice. But breathwork is probably one of the most common ways to achieve that. I remember many, many years ago, you know, I was really stressed out. I have a tendency, as people can probably guess, to throw myself into my work and kind of just over obsess about things. And I remember downloading Headspace, which is like a meditation app that focuses on breath work. And I remember giving it a go and I gotta say, I don't know what I expected to get out of it, but it absolutely changed my life. It was an amazing investment. I highly recommend it. Unfortunately, then I got too busy and I kind of forgot to, you know, I sort of fell out of the habit and the quality of my life immediately went back down again and I started getting stressed again. And something I've been trying to do is get back into that more regularly because I absolutely noticed a difference. And I mean, people out there listening to this probably are understandably skeptical about this because it sounds like some new age hippie stuff, right? It doesn't sound like it could possibly have any backing in reality, but I would encourage people to look into that because it has been researched and there are surprising findings about the potential benefits of mindfulness practice. So I do encourage people to at least try it. I think that, you know, it costs almost nothing to try it, right? I mean, you don't need to pay for a Headspace account. I'll put a link in the show notes if people want to try the app, but you don't need to. There's free YouTube videos that'll teach you how to do this. And it's surprisingly beneficial to all aspects of your life. I mean, I used it not for jiu-jitsu competition, but I used it for high performance at work and just overall life stress due to having a stressful job. And it made a massive difference. I think it's one of those things that I would suggest that everyone kind of make an effort to incorporate into their life as a practice. There are some, you know, I've talked about how jiu-jitsu, I recommend everyone try jiu-jitsu, but I fully understand if people bounce off of it and they don't like it, right? I don't think it really is for everyone. Some people will hate it. That's fine. It's not for me to judge. But I think that mindfulness practice is a good idea for almost everyone. And so I do encourage people to give that a shot if they haven't already.
Yeah, I totally agree. Last time we had Miles Lucas in, I convinced my dad to come. And he is, you know, my dad's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's not going to be duped by some, you know, crazy Eastern philosophy breathwork guy. And he left that and he's like, yeah, this was life-changing. It's like, this was huge. And just for me, when it comes to jiu-jitsu competition, I really think, and the difference between like me telling you to be present and breath work is actually a physical thing. It is something you can, you know, it's a button that you can push if you do these reps of breath work. And you can pretty consistently, or at least I've been able to pretty consistently command certain mindsets from that. And, yeah, I just think that tying your mental prep, whatever that may be, into breath work is one of the biggest things that I tell people when they just want something quick about like, hey, I struggle being a good competitor. Like, how could I be a better competitor? Breath work 2 hours out, make sure to practice it before so you know what you're doing. And that is kind of, yeah, that's my big thing for performance.
Yeah. The other thing too, that I would point out, a big pattern that I hear from high performers is the importance of building performance triggers. And the idea being, if something happens that normally takes you out of the zone, you have a thing you do to put you back into the zone. One of the things that, I mean, as an example, Josh Waitzkin has talked about this extensively in his book. One of the examples he had was like distracting songs that, especially a song that he has stuck in his head that was really obnoxious and it was actually ruining his performance. And he practiced reframing his mental mindset so that that song became his like, let's go song. And so that instead of when he heard that song, he got pissed off and frustrated. He heard that and that was like his like it's on music, and it shifted his mindset completely. And I've had similar success with breath work, where if you learn to develop an awareness about what stresses you out and when you feel that body response, just immediately do a breath work exercise. That becomes the trigger, and the action that you take as the result of the trigger, that helps a ton. So as soon as you feel that anxiety building up, as soon as you feel the obsessions about the past and the future, do a breath work exercise. And what you'll find pretty quickly is that trigger becomes almost automatic. It allows you to de-escalate your emotional state really, really quickly. That is just such a key thing in life because, I mean, so many regrettable decisions are made when you get too riled up and emotional in the moment. The ability to regulate and automatically cool yourself back down is like just an absolutely essential life skill for high performers.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I try to not talk too much about it just because I'm not an expert in it, right? And it's just like I worry about being the blue belt in breath work that's, you know, trying to tell everybody about it. But there's something else in my training is like, for cardio's sake, that's something else Miles Lucas talked about, just how you breathe for rolling in jiu-jitsu. And like, then you hear people talk about how if you do a private with Ixon, that's what it's the first one is probably going to be about, is combining your movement with breath work. And, you know, you can always go back to like, oh, that's hokey. These people don't know what they're talking about. But I do think as an artist, as a scientist, as whatever you are, I think it's not a bad idea to ask the question like, well, what if they're telling the truth? What if they're right? And, you know, that was kind of my premise for starting to look at breath work. And that has been huge game changer for me, performance anxiety and just jiu-jitsu in general.
Awesome. One other thing I'd love to ask you, man, and I mean, we could talk about this for days, and maybe we should, you know, maybe we should have a whole series of conversations on this. I think it's such a cool and important topic, but when the big day rolls around on competition day, what do you suggest that your athletes do to help stay present? Because that is often one of the hardest parts, right? Is the hours leading up to the competition where you gotta go through the bullshit where they measure your sleeves and they make you wait. And, oh, you were supposed to go on in 10 minutes, but actually you gotta wait 3 hours and you gotta sit there and cool your heels. And, you know, it's a very difficult situation to be in. And something that I've heard world champs say many times is that you often can, you know, lose the match before the match even starts if you let the run-up get the better of you. What do you suggest in that very stressful time where you're basically sitting there waiting for the performance to begin? It is hard to stay present and stay mindful during that time, especially if, again, you're like getting your sleeves measured and making sure that your gi is regulation and all of that. What do you suggest to your athletes? I mean, you brought up a great example of just shooting them a text and telling them to do a mindfulness practice, but anything else that you would suggest people apply if they're worried about overstimulation on the run-up to competition?
Man, this is how I look at it. Like, if I am coach for the day, and maybe it's a big event, and I feel like when I really look at the hardest tournaments to perform at or the hardest competitions to perform at, in my opinion, they are going to be majors in jiu-jitsu, just something you put a lot of pressure on yourself. But then they're also going to be late night professional jiu-jitsu events or just late night jiu-jitsu events, because you have to sit in your anxiety for an entire day. You don't compete at 9:30 a.m. You know, you don't wake up at 6 and be nervous for a couple hours and then go compete. You have to sit all day. And I really think that like not wasting your energy is going to be the most important thing, because most likely you are going to feel that anxiety. You know, you can try different things sometimes depending on, you know, if I'm doing especially like a late night show, and I've done a lot of those almost with the goal of, I know that I'm, you know, I'm the main event in some city I don't live in. You know, I know that this other dude sold a ton of tickets and I only have my coaches with me. And being able to perform in that environment, I think, and accepting some matches like that was kind of my, to me, my last test of, can I actually just perform on command? And the reason I say that those environments suck is because people will come up to you. One, people are drunk, and people will come up to you and be like, oh, you need to be getting pumped up. It's like, no, I go in 5 hours, dude. We're still watching the 6-year-olds compete right now. I don't need to be getting pumped up. You know, I 4 hours, I don't. 3 hours, I don't. 2 hours, I do my breath work. I have my routine. And then again, I do nothing. And then at an hour, I warm up and then I go compete. And having that routine and then everything else is just sitting. And I just have always told my students, and I tell them this a lot, that like a lot of times the guy that can win the tournament, especially later in the day, is the guy who could just sit in anxiety better and not let that anxiety cause him to waste a bunch of energy by talking way too much to people, waste a bunch of energy by running around, warming up way too early, doing way too much. But just to be able to say, I am anxious right now, that is the moment that I'm in. And to be able to accept it and to just sit in that anxiety, but then when the moment of jujitsu comes or the moment of warm-up comes, you're in that moment and you warm up and you don't, you know, I think back to Triple H has a story where he talks about going into the locker room when Floyd Mayweather was about to fight somebody, and Floyd was like laying on the couch watching basketball. And he's like, shouldn't you be doing something, like getting prepared? And he said, nah, the hard work is done. He's like, I'm either good enough to beat this guy or I'm not. And, you know, when I think about that, when it comes to jujitsu competition, is if you can just sit in it, if you can just accept, man, it sucks that I deal with this anxiety every time. It sucks that I keep telling myself I'm never going to compete again. I hate this. And you just accept that, like, that's the moment you're in. That's kind of a little bit of what you pay for when you go to a jiu-jitsu competition. And you just see if you can perform in spite of that. And you'll do it sometimes. And, you know, first you'll try this and it won't work. But if you do it enough, I really feel like I actually just taken a 9-month break off of competing. My wife had a baby. And so like just the lead up to it, and then, you know, having just a newborn at home, it's made it hard to compete. And I was able to come back to competing after 9 months and perform. I'm just like a fatter version of myself. And so it wasn't.
And in jiu-jitsu, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, right? It's just a more dad bod version of myself. And so, and when I did that, it wasn't, you know, it was like all the same stuff still worked. I still felt the anxiety that I always feel. I sat in it. I dealt with it. Didn't do much. You know, I did have to coach some that day. But then, you know, when there was downtime, I would listen to a podcast, watch YouTube video, play a game on my phone. And then when it's time to compete, you just go compete. And it really is just learning to sit in that moment and not waste energy. So then you can save up all that nervous energy to just blitz your opponent really good.
Amazing, man. Well, I think that's an outstanding way to close this one off. But before we do, any closing thoughts or things you wanted to discuss that we didn't have a chance to get into in this conversation?
I would say just kind of when you're looking at it, all of this, when you're looking at performance, and I mentioned this, but I really like to reiterate this. When I was coming up, we really recognized this. My dad and I always noticed that the guys that were the best competitors tended to be the guys that competed the most. And it's so hard if you have performance anxiety, but if you do and you're suffering from it, like, it sucks, but the best answer is to compete, is to just get reps and to do it over and over and over again. And you'll embarrass yourself, you'll lose. But honestly, if you ever are that embarrassed, if you just YouTube my name and then like IBJJF, there are hundreds of losses when you look. And I honestly, I'm cool with those because I learned to be a competitor taking those losses at black belt, because when I got to black belt, I came to the realization that I was high level in my jiu-jitsu, but I was not high level in my ability to perform and in my mindset. And I had to go lose a lot of matches in front of my students before I ever got any wins that were relevant at all. And, you know, it made it worth it. And so I guess the closing thought is sometimes losing today turns into winning tomorrow.
Man, that is amazing advice. I could do a whole episode just on that philosophy right there. But in the interim, I know that if people want to hear more from you, they have a lot of options to do that. Let's plug it, man. If people want to check out your YouTube content, your podcast, all of the other stuff you do, where can they go to find you?
Best way, you search I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu. That is my podcast name. That's my the Instagram that we post content on, and the YouTube channel. On the YouTube channel, we also post a lot of different technique now, and just a lot of conceptual. My teaching of jiu-jitsu is, I think, unique. And so I've just been trying to share that more than other than just the podcast stuff. And yeah, besides that, then we've been pushing our I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show premium, and we've been putting out new courses. We have a new guard passing course that comes out in April. And yeah, those are the places to follow me.
Nice. Well, I will put links to all of that in the show notes. And of course, as always, if people are fans of your work and they want to support that work, I always recommend in jiu-jitsu that we take the time to support the people who are giving us so much stuff for free. So definitely check out I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu and the premium service. I will put links to all of that in the show notes. I'll also put a link to all of our stuff. We try to keep it simple. Everything we make lives at bjjmentalmodels.com. Go there and you'll get getting close to 300 episodes of this podcast. One of the things, of course, that makes us unique is we try to make every episode timeless, educational, always valuable. So you should be able to pick out any episode from the catalog and treat it like a lesson. Get some immediate value out of it in a way that's different from pretty much anything else that anyone else is doing. You can also sign up for our newsletter, getting close to 10,000 subscribers there. It's just an incredible resource if you want to get more detailed show notes from what we talk about on the podcast, also thought pieces that we publish weekly, and also occasional deals. I often give away free instructionals to people who take the time to sign up to that newsletter. So please do if you haven't already. It's free. You can unsubscribe at any time. And of course, if you want to help me pay the bills here, I mean, as you have probably noticed, this podcast is and has always been completely ad-free. I would like to keep it that way. The way that we justify all of the time and cost expense here is through our subscribers at BJJ Mental Models Premium. If you join our premium service, you're going to get access to a gigantic audio course library. If you like the way that we present info here, we've got over 100 hours of courses from some of the best grapplers in the sport, breaking down performance mindset, philosophy, tactics, strategy, and of course, mental models as well. We also have a series of premium podcasts that you can only get there. For example, one of them is The Highest Levels. It's an awesome peak performance podcast featuring Emily Kwok and Johannan. We just published an incredible interview with Marcelo Garcia. I actually put that one on the public feed just so people could get a sample of that. We've also got a great podcast called State of the Meta by Drew Foster, who we talked about before. There's just a ton of value there. And of course, you'll also get rolling reviews. Josh is one of our coaches. So if you like Josh and you want him to tell you why you suck at jiu-jitsu, join BJJ Mental Models Premium and I'll hook you up. Again, there's a 7-day free trial, so you can check it out at no cost to yourself. But I truly do appreciate the support. It makes everything we do possible. All of that lives at bjjmentalmodels.com. And I will put a link to all of Josh's stuff and our stuff in the show notes to make it easy for you. But Josh, man, I always love chatting with you. I can tell you're a podcaster because you're so good at putting these ideas together. And might I say, the audio quality is excellent too. So thank you so much for coming by. Thank you for helping all of the people on our premium service with your coaching too. I get so much good feedback about your method. And I definitely recommend, if people aren't already subscribing to your stuff, so much of it is generously given away for free. It doesn't cost people anything to sign up for your podcast, to follow you on YouTube. So I definitely suggest people do that if they haven't already. And thanks again for coming by.
Man, thank you so much again for having me on, Steve.
You are always welcome here, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks to the listeners too. Always appreciate people spending their time with us each week. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.